This is Tom Roy with radio news from Wavefarms WGXC in New York. News about radio waves, transmission art, wireless surveillance, and other broadcast issues from wavefarm.org. You are tuned into a radio show about radio waves. I'm Tom Roe, your host, beaming in from the Catskill Mountains in New York. Now for the latest in radio news, broadcast regulation, transmission art, open airwaves, and other radio art. Ted Johnson in Variety magazine reports that new Federal Communications Commission Chairman Tom Wheeler says he supports net neutrality rules that left room for internet providers to be able to charge users based on the amount of bandwidth they use. Wheeler gave his first policy speech and then answered questions on December 2nd at Ohio State University. You can go to newsroom.free103.9.org for the link to the video to watch the entire speech. Net neutrality is commonly defined as not being usage-based pricing. In the speech, Wheeler said that, quote, "We are seeing the market evolve in such a way that there will be variations in pricing. There will be variations in service. I'm a firm believer in the market. I think we're also going to see a two-sided market where Netflix might say, well, I'll pay to make sure that my subscriber receives the best possible transmission of this movie. I think we want to let those kinds of things evolve, and we want to observe what happens from that, and we want to make decisions accordingly." Let's listen to a little bit of new FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler's talk December 2nd at Ohio State.
Our goal should be to ask how competition can best serve the public and what, if any, action, including governmental action, is needed to preserve the future of network competition in wired or wireless. Notice that I stressed if any. If the facts and data determine that a market is competitive, the need for the FCC intervention decreases. I have zero interest in imposing new regulations on a competitive market just because we can. I have repeatedly advocated the seesaw rule, that when competition is high, regulation can be low. The effect of the seesaw rule gives companies control over their regulatory fates based on the degree to which they embrace competition in their markets. It's important to remember, however, that competition does not and will not produce adequate outcomes in the circumstance of significant, persistent market power or of significant negative externalities. When those occur, the Communications Act and the interests of our society, the public interest, compel us to act, and we will. I will not hesitate to invoke the full authority granted to us by Congress to protect competition. I will not hesitate to use the full authority granted us by Congress where competition is not available to secure the public interest through the promotion of competitive markets.
Paul Rimsmondale at RadioSurvivor.com reports that Twitter has 49 million users every month in the United States. Facebook has 198 million. There are about 6 million United States Spotify users. And radio has 241.8 million listeners per week, not just per month. That's according to the Nielsen's December Radar Radio Listening Report, which also shows an increase of 700,000 weekly radio listeners over December 2012. That's an increase of 5.3 million new radio listeners since 2009. There was a particularly strong growth in Hispanic listeners, which accounted for 372,000 of those new radio listeners last year. Harry Cole at the Com Law blog reports that despite the FCC's repeated insistence that it's going to have a broadcast auction next year, on Friday, December 6th, a new FCC chairman, Tom Wheeler, who just addressed the issue in his first policy speech at Ohio State earlier in the week, now says that the broadcast auction won't happen until the middle of 2015. Wheeler's post on the FCC blog mentions that an initial report and order establishing policies for the broadcast auction should be ready for the Federal Communications Commission to vote on in the spring of 2014. The FCC is letting broadcast companies give up their terrestrial broadcast frequencies to make room for cellular phone use and other new digital uses of the airwave. Some congressmen are counting on lots of money to make budget problems go away from these broadcast auctions. So there has been a push to make them happen sooner rather than later. But Wheeler is acknowledging, Cole reports, that much work has to be done to set the policies to make the broadcast auctions fair to both consumers, radio listeners, and the corporations involved. And go to the Communication Law blog to see more about this story. Paul Rimsmandale at RadioSurvivor.com reports that the United States House of Representatives voted on December 5th, 325-91, to pass the Innovation Act. The bill is intended to fix some gaps in the patent law. In particular, Rimsmandale writes, those that, quote, permit patent trolls to go after customers and users of technologies like HD radio and podcasters. Rimsmandale says the legislation isn't perfect, but would provide relief for plaintiffs against unreasonable lawsuits. House Republicans also announced last week that they are going to take up chairman of the House Commerce Committee and Communications and Technology Subcommittee announced December 3rd that they intended a review of the Communications Act, which was last revised in 1996. The original act was passed in 1934, and the 1996 Telecommunication Act has largely been criticized as a giveaway to corporate broadcasters. Go to RadioSurvivor.com for more details of plans to upgrade the Communication Act of 1996. Jennifer Waits at RadioSurvivor.com reports that the low-power FM advocate REC Networks has been analyzing the low-power FM applications just into the federal government and posted at FCC.gov. They've just filed an informal objection about concerns about 245 low-power FM applications that were prepared by the Hispanic Christian Community Network President Antonio Cesar Guell. Hispanic Christian Community Network reportedly owns more than 40 low-power television stations already, and these Guell-prepared LPFM applications claim to be for unique local nonprofit organizations all over the country, while the rules for low-power radio do not allow for multiple owners. According to a statement from Michi Iri of REC Networks, quote, our informal objection was intended to flag these 245 applications to call the FCC's attention to various patterns in these applications, unquote. REC Networks says that the applications all have identical organization phone numbers, email addresses, and educational statements. Additionally, some of the applications listed questionable main studio locations, including gated communities, apartment complexes, and non-existent addresses, unquote. The FCC will have to deal with REC Networks' objection before moving forward in any group where these applications may conflict with others. Waits also reports the FCC also made a statement recently about the low-power FM stations. According to the notice, quote, the Bureau has identified approximately 900 technically acceptable low-power FM applications which are not in conflict with other applications, i.e. their singleton applications. The staff has begun to change the status of these applications from received to accepted for filing in the database at FCC.gov. Daily Broadcast Applications Public Notice announces this action and starts a 30-day period for the filing of petitions to deny, unquote. So anyone that wants to make a statement about any possible low-power applications has 30 days once the FCC marks the applications accepted for filing. You can see all the information about all FCC low-power applications at FCC.gov in their database there. You can go to RadioSurvivor.com for more information about low-power FM radio. Legendary California radio and television engineer Roy Trumbull died at the age of 74 last week. He worked with KRE and was inducted into the Bay Area Radio Hall of Fame last summer. At Boing Boing magazine online, Dan White posted a video tribute. Here is an excerpt.
Hello, I'm Dan White, and I'd like to take a few minutes to remember a true legend of broadcasting, my almost lifelong friend and colleague, Roy Trumbull. Roy passed away on November 25th, 2013, after a lengthy illness. The broadcast industry mourns his passing shortly after his induction into the Bay Area Radio Hall of Fame, Class of 2013. I'd like to share a few highlights of the induction. But first, a bit about Roy. Roy was not only a brilliant broadcast engineer in both radio and television, He also worked on the air at several radio stations in Southern and Northern California. Roy enjoyed doing interview programs and did them so well. Here's a couple of samples. First, Roy talks with the late George Shearing.
In 1959, I moved from San Francisco to Southern California, and I read that George Shearing was doing a concert at Orange Coast College. I had no connection with Shearing's manager or the college, but I showed up with a tape recorder and a bag of gear and managed to make it past the house manager and into the green room. Between sets, I interviewed George amidst the sound of sandwiches being unwrapped and beers being opened. The predominant sound was that of an air conditioning fan. I had been volunteering with the National Federation of the Blind, and I wanted to ask George about his experiences as a blind man working in a sighted world. All this was in lieu of pretending to be knowledgeable about jazz and asking the weak questions he usually got. I hit pay dirt. He had a flow of stories about all manner of dumb things he'd put up with.
Do you have any problems with, people not being too willing to talk to you or perhaps talking around you? Has this ever occurred?
Oh, yes. Many times people will say to my manager or my wife or somebody, does he take sugar?
Oh, yes.
You know, in a restaurant. And then I've often wanted to have a piece of paper in my left-hand pocket that says yes and a piece of paper in my right-hand pocket that says no, and hand the appropriate piece of paper not to the person asking the question, but to my manager or wife, who in turn hands it to the person asking the question.
At Andrew Sullivan's Dish, he links to a story about former Harvard professor Bert Vaught, who has asked tens of thousands of people across the United States questions about how they pronounce certain things in the 2003 Harvard Dialect Survey. Here's a bit of a sample of people talking all over the United States about the same thing, but in a very different way.
Hello.
You there?
And you were looking for somebody that talks like a Maina.
Have a strong Miami accent.
I'm from Owatonna, Minnesota.
And I'm a native Washingtonian.
Alabama.
New York.
Bloomingdale, Texas.
Los Angeles.
Oakland.
Albuquerque.
Philadelphia.
Indiana.
Hohenwald, Tennessee.
I've lived in the Chicago area the entire 49 years of my life.
So what is your generic term for a sweetened
carbonated
beverage?
That's a soda.
Soda. As if it had more in it.
Pop.
Coke.
What do you call the long sandwich that contains cold cuts, lettuce, and so on?
Hero?
Hoagie. Yeah.
Sub?
Yeah, I call it the Subway. I generic. I just do that.
Oh, that's a po' boy down here.
A pecan is a nut.
Pecan?
Well, in New York, it used to be pecan, but in Florida, it's pecan.
Okay, I say pecan.
Pecan.
Can you say this word, B-A-G?
Bag.
B-A-G. Bag.
Okay, I say it wrong. Bag. Most people in Minnesota do.
A roly-poly?
A pill bug.
Doodle bug.
A little creature that rolls. Well, I don't know what we're talking about. What is that? You mean you're talking about a shrimp?
A U-M-B-R-E-L-L-A?
An umbrella?
Umbrella. What are other people saying?
Umbrella.
What do you call it when the rain falls while the sun is shining?
Sun shower. I went through five of them today.
I'm going to do it. The devil is beating his wife. It's not, I don't really say about it much, but I always think, oh yeah, the devil is beating his wife whenever I see it happening.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
What's your general term for a rubber-soled shoe worn in gym class?
I would say sneaker.
Sneaker?
Them I would call tennis shoes.
Tennis shoes?
Gym shoes?
Route.
Route? I know out in the Midwest there they call it a route.
Route.
But a route is when we're beating the other team in basketball by 50 points. That's a route.
And what is your general term for a big road that you drive relatively fast on?
An expressway? Freeway.
I call it a highway.
So I've been trying to say highway on the East Coast.
Subway.
B-L.
But in D.C. you call it the Metro.
Metro.
The T. My mom works for BART, so BART.
Standing in line.
I'm standing in line.
Waiting to get into somewhere.
I'm standing in line.
Mm-hmm.
I'm online.
Online.
What word or words do you use to
address a group of two or more people.
Two or more people?
Probably, hey, you guys.
You guys? Like, hey, guys.
Y'all.
Y'all.
Are y'all coming with us?
Y'all come over here.
So if I was in Philly, I'd probably say, hey, yous.
Yous are the best people I know.
What do you call the box you bury a dead person in?
A coffin.
A casket.
Okay.
M-I-R-A-C-L-E.
You mean miracle?
A miracle?
A miracle.
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 Oh, miracles. Yeah, you believe in miracles. Yeah, I do sometimes.
We're all different. Yeah,
I guess so. And this is the last one. What do you call a point that is purely academic or that cannot be settled and isn't worth discussing any further?
Call it a mute point?
Mute. Oh, wait, moot. Moot point.
A moot point.
A waste of goddamn time.
If you listened to the radio at all in 2013, you probably heard some of the following. This is DJ Earworm's annual mashup of the big hits of 2013.
Trouble, trouble, trouble. I see it all.
Dreaming about the things that we could be.
They tell me I'm too young to understand.
Too young, too dumb to realize.
Welcome to the new age. Welcome to the new age. Welcome to the new age.
The Muppets have been known to interact with radio and the media for years. Let's listen to a few Muppet sounds for no reason at all. First, a classic Martian radio bit from Sesame Street in the early 1970s as two Martians discover the radio.
What?
Look. Look.
Look.
Radio.
Radio.
Eagle, I would just like to say a few words about nudity in the world today. And I, for one, am just appalled by it. Why, did you know that underneath their clothing, the entire population of the world is walking around completely naked? Is that disgusting? And it's not just people, although goodness knows that's bad enough. But animals, too. Even cute little doggies and pussycats can't be trusted. Underneath their fur, absolutely naked. And it's not just the quadrupeds, either. Birds, too, yes. Beneath our fine feathers, birds wear nothing. Nothing at all. Someone hand me a robe.
Welcome back to Follow the Money. The Muppets are back and being terrorized by an evil oil executive in their new movie. Liberal Hollywood depicting a successful businessman as evil. That's not new. Joining me now, Dan Gaynor from the Media Research Center. Dan, let's point this out. This oil Muppet, evil man that he is called Tex Richman. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, it's amazing how far the left will go just to stoop to, you know, manipulate your kids to convince them, give the anti-corporate message. I mean, this is a Muppet movie, for goodness sakes. The only thing green that should be up on that screen should be Kermit the Frog.
And so what's actually going on here? I mean, I'll put it out there. Is liberal Hollywood using class warfare to kind of brainwash our kids?
Yeah, absolutely. And they've been doing it for decades.
But I don't ask you how you felt when... I think it was Eric Bolling from Fox News said it was pushing a dangerous liberal agenda and trying to brainwash children.
Yes.
That's horrible.
It's so dangerous. It's so afraid. No, you know, it's a funny thing. They were concerned about us
having some prejudice against oil companies, and I can tell you that's categorically not true. And besides, if we had a problem with oil companies, why would we have spent the entire film driving around in a gas-guzzling Rolls Royce?
He's got a point.
It's almost as laughable as accusing Fox News as, being news.
There's a new sound, the newest sound around, the strangest sound that you have ever heard. Not like a wild boar or a jungle lion's roar, it isn't like the cry of any bird. But there's a new sound, it's deep down in the ground, and everyone who listens to it squirms. Because it's new sound, so deep down in the ground, it's the sound that's made by worms. There's a new sound, the newest sound around, the strangest sound that you have ever heard. Not like a wild boar or a jungle lion's roar, it isn't like the cry of any bird. But there's a new sound, it's deep down in the ground, and everyone who listens to it squirms. Because it's new sound, so deep down in the ground is the sound that's made by worms. There's a new sound, the newest sound around, the strangest sound that you have ever heard. Not like a wild boar or a jungle lion's roar, it isn't like the cry of any bird. But there's a new sound, it's deep down in the ground, and everyone who listens to it squirms. Because it's new sound, so deep down in the ground is the sound that's made by worms. There's a new sound, the newest sound around, the strangest sound that you have ever heard. Not like a wild boar or a jungle lion's roar, it isn't like the cry of any bird. But there's a new sound, it's deep down in the ground, and everyone who listens to it squirms. Because it's new sound, so deep down in the ground is a sound that's made by worms.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.